Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to a special edition of the Bonfire Podcast, cage side here at the UFC Apex with Laura Sanko, who will be calling the action penultimate week here at Dana White's Contender Series. Laura, are you sad? Are you sad when the season gets close to the end?
I'm sad we don't have a fire in front of us. Can we light a fire in the Apex? Is that legal?
I don't think PR would
love it. Probably frowned upon. I love the show so much. It is, I will admit to you, very exhausting for me because I'm the only one that does every single episode, so I'm flying back and forth, so it's a little bit bittersweet. I do love this show, and so yes, the penultimate show being here, it's kind of crazy that the season's wrapping up pretty soon, but there's a little part of me that's probably okay with it also.
I think week 9 will be in the books by the time most people see this, yeah. But I think going into this one, I think 45 fighters are already signed, and the record's about 46.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, what does that speak to you? Is that a talent thing, just a roster turnover thing? What does that say to you?
I think it's all of the above. I mean, I was actually just talking to someone a second ago. This, to me, is one of the better seasons we've ever had. And what really stuck out to me, listen, it's been this way for a few years now growing, but to me, this season was by far the most international. There was I'm never going to remember what week it is because they're all a little bit of a blur to me, but there was a week, maybe 6 or 7, I remember looking, there were 9 countries represented on a 5-fight card, which is insane. It's absolutely insane. And it speaks to the global reach of the sport, the global reach of the UFC, and yeah, it's been a very successful season contract-wise.
Yeah, seriously.
For the ladies.
Yeah, even you don't need the win on this one, apparently, but you just got to fight with the heart and they'll bring you in.
100%. I mean, that's been the message on this show, mm-hmm. But I love when that message actually, you know, comes to fruition and we see it happen. And yeah, that takes some personal, I guess you might say, vicarious pride in the both female fights having all 4 participants being signed is pretty cool. And they deserve it. They went out there and they were the embodiment of what Dana wants to see on this show, which is effort, it's grit, it's determination, it's go out there, give it everything you got, and even if you don't win, you might end up winning in the end.
How differently do you feel you have to call these fights than like an actual UFC fight?
That's actually a really great question. It is pretty different. I mean, the calling, the mechanisms of calling the fight are obviously the same, but and often it's a producer reminding us, because we do kind of go into normal fight night mode, hey, this show is different. And you do kind of have to keep that in mind. And we try to remind the audience of that as well. It's really, it's not at all about, I mean, it is about winning the fight, but almost more so, considering we just talk about losers getting contracts, it is more so about putting it all out there. And that is so much easier said than done as well. Like, I almost feel guilty sometimes saying like, oh, last week was a perfect example. I'm forgetting the fighter's name, but the Russian fighter who had a great fight, really smart game plan, executed it, got the win. But Dana didn't see that thing that is necessary on this show. I think we'll see him in the UFC, you know, pretty soon. But, and that's the other kind of takeaway too, is like, even if you don't get a contract here, if you do have a good performance, you know, you're on a short list. We've seen that many times.
Yeah, Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby, like they're going to have that in your mind if something pops up. So it's, yeah, the job interview side of it, and then the actual how do you get in the UFC. So, yeah, we'll see how this goes, and I'm sure it's going to be a record number of contracts, obviously. We'll probably get over 50 here.
Yeah, I think we will. Again, given the fact that this year we had two losers get contracts, yeah, we'll probably break the record, which is crazy to think about when you look back on season one and there were guys like Chris Curtis getting spinning. Crazy. What was it, like a wheel kick or something crazy?
Like some sweet chin music.
Yeah, and then they're like, no, we don't want him. Yeah. But yeah, it's the show has certainly evolved as the UFC has evolved in terms of the way that the roster is put together. And, you know, I think it was the Perth card was over 50%. Graduates of Contender Series, which is pretty cool to see at this point.
When someone says UFC 320 and you think back, what is the thing, first thing that's going to come to your mind when you think back at that event?
First thing that comes to mind is just that again, you know, it's so the disrespect. I saw someone else write this, the disrespect of a recycled meme really speaks to the punctuation of that win for Alex Pereira. I don't think anybody could have predicted that he would have won so emphatically, so definitively. Maybe he and his team would have, but given how the last fight went and how closely contested it was, I think a lot of people, including myself, I had him picked to win the fight, but never in a million years would I have said, oh yeah, round one. What was the
80 seconds?
80 seconds, no, I would not have.
Fastest MMA win ever.
Unbelievable, pretty cool.
It sucks, though, that we have to sit here now. It was after the first fight, Alex's side, I wasn't 100%, and now it's Megamed's side, the rib injury, like all that stuff. I don't know. Is this like a modern MMA issue just in general? Like, you can't just take the loss on the chin and move on. There always has to be something. It feels more and more now than ever.
Yeah, and I think, too, just the nature of the beast of everybody being in everybody's business, it's going to come out regardless of whether the fighter sits down and does an interview about it. So part of it's on them, part of it's on like just the fact that we have so much information about everybody at this point. There's part of me that like, I've always respected the guys that kind of try to keep it quiet and just sort of take the losses on the chin. Yeah.
Feels like it's more and more rare these days. Yes. I know Dustin Poirier was on the show last week kind of talking about that same stuff too. Like he always keeps it in.
Dustin is a perfect example. There are a number of guys, but Dustin definitely is at the top of the list where they're sort of old school in that mentality of like, I guarantee Dustin Poirier was banged up in about coming into about every single fight. But they're going to tell you it's the best camp ever. And, you know, they're also not going to tell you after they lose what they were dealing with leading up to it. But that's just sort of, it's the story of being a prize fighter.
What's most appealing to you when you think about Alex Pereira's future? Is it like stick around, defend this belt again, start another reign, or
man,
this heavyweight, White House, John Jones, all these things?
It's so tricky because I'm gonna contradict myself if we talk about Rob, because for Alex, I want to see he's already doing such extraordinary things. I feel like we as fans want to see how far we can push the envelope, like how extraordinary can he be. So yes, I would like to see him at some point. I don't know if it's next, because I would love to see that Carlos fight, but at some point I've got to see him at heavyweight. Mm-hmm. Like how incredible would that be for that to be his story, if he were to be able to win a fight or even a title at heavyweight? That would be insane. But then in the same breath, I also appreciate guys like Pantoja and I feel like Merab, who are just going to absolutely clean out and clean it out again, you know, their respective division.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've seen the greatest champions, right? They are able to knock off of those contenders once, twice. But yeah, he's been calling for this for a while. I feel like Alex like really wants that. But I don't know, Dana doesn't seem too enthusiastic. I mean, don't call the guy 185er. He's had more fights in the UFC at light heavyweight. He has the second most light heavyweight title fight wins in history, tied with Chuck Liddell at 5. And then John Jones is way up there at like 13 or 14. But right there.
You need like a little animation for every time you just drop an absolute bar of a fact. Yeah, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
pretty. He's already there, but I don't know what decision they're going to make. John Jones, we don't know where he is in life right now with everything that happened with his brother.
Next year is going to be a fascinating year.
Yeah.
It's going to be in every regard. Mm-hmm. Really, really sad to see what happened in John's immediate family. And, you know, people think that that stuff shouldn't necessarily change a fighter's schedule, but like, they're real people, you know. I can't imagine dealing with a loss like that and even caring about fighting anymore, to be honest with you. When death happens that close to you, it changes your perspective on life. And at some point you're like, this is cool.
Yeah.
It's incredible, but like, it's not,
it's fleeting.
It's fleeting. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough for John. We'll see when he speaks and all that stuff. But, yeah, for now, Alex, I don't know, he claims he likes to be so active. So I feel like maybe if they're going to Australia and, you know, in February, maybe he makes a return.
Yeah. I would love to see him fight Carlos. And if he gets a win over Carlos, I mean, I have to see him at heavyweight at some point. But then, you know, I saw some people arguing that Jiří jumped the line with his knockout. I don't think so, just because they've been there. We've already seen that fight, as amazing as it was, and as amazing as Jiří's own sort of phoenix rising from the ashes moment was. But I want to see the Carlos fight first.
Do you think Merab, speaking of him, is he locked up Fighter of the Year, 3 title defenses? Or do you think that Jack Del Maddalena, if he can do something in New York, beating Bilal, who was on like a 10 or 11 fight winning streak, and then Islam, who's on 15, does he at least make that conversation interesting?
He definitely makes the conversation interesting. 100% he makes the conversation interesting. I have to give it to Merab. I have to give it to Merab. Being able to be that active as a champion, and I say this every time I talk about Merab lately, to operate at the championship level is one thing. To continue to evolve in a noticeable way as a champion is otherworldly. And the fact that the guy continues to add tools to the tool belt, becoming more of a finish. I realize he didn't finish last time, but he almost did.
Yeah.
And he's just becoming more and more dangerous, which is only going to increase his stardom. And yeah, I think he's got Fighter of the Year personally.
Well, especially if he gets the fourth fight. I mean, that would be game over. Yeah, there'd be no argument.
He'd run the board at that point. Yeah.
Do you think that's a bad idea though, in your mind?
For anybody else, literally anybody else, we have so many cautionary tales about overactive champions. I just feel like that man is cut from a different mold. And I notice it, like, obviously we all see how he fights, but if you spend any time around him when he's not fighting, he is as busy a person as he is a fighter. Like two fights ago, so it would have been his rematch with O'Malley, I ended up at this big dinner the night before the fights, and there were like 30 people there, and he's literally walking around, serving everybody, saying hi to everybody. You know, it's like, I'm like, Rob, you're tired. A lot of fighters don't go to their, like, a big get-together meal the night before a title fight for good reason. Because, at least for me, I don't know about you, maybe it's because I'm an introvert naturally, like, those social interactions take little bits of energy out of me. And I have to kind of just, like, be a recluse before I'm going to do something big. That man is an endless gas tank in every sense of the word. So, for him, I don't do it.
Is there anything Piotr Jan can do to make that a more interesting fight than last time, you think, though?
I don't know. Piotr has looked fantastic.
He said he was 50% in an interview today.
Did he really? Yeah. But maybe I tend to believe him, because look at his last few performances. Yeah. He's looked phenomenal. But I just don't know if stylistically you can change that much,
yeah.
You know? And again, with Merab getting better as well, that's a big gap to close. I just ate. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I feel like you just need to knock Merab out. Like, you got to go all in on the KO, because I don't see, I mean, I don't know. Umar had some stuff with him going on, but then he hurt his hand. But I don't know. Like, if you're game planning to win a decision over this guy, that feels like the wrong approach.
Absolutely the wrong approach. But even the guys who go in there talking about knockouts, he's got a great chin. His defense is getting better and better. Like, there was a time where that was the obvious game plan against Merab. And it felt realistic, you know, in the beginning of this run, the first few fights of this run. I remember him getting, you know, rocked and kind of almost out of there, and then he'd find a way to wrestle again. You don't worry about that as much anymore. Obviously, it's always on the table, but he has become incredibly well-rounded.
Yeah, he's very skilled. Okay, a few more things I want to touch on. Did you see this Conor McGregor stuff today?
Yeah,
thoughts?
I panicked.
I know, you're like, oh.
I literally did. I was like, no. And then I did the math. I was like, okay, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine.
I mean, it's a weird thing. Like, very data back, we know, we're not going to joke around. Like, we know he took himself out of the pool. He was trying to do stuff to help him recover. It's just weird. It feels weird for this to come out, like, now on this day. After he says yesterday, I'm like, I'm taking a break from social media. See you guys later. I'm going to log off.
Yeah. You never know. Like, I'm assuming he knew this was coming down the pipe and just didn't want to have to deal with the, you know, barrage of BS. But I mean, this is something that he and his team have known about, something the commission's known about. So listen, they backdate stuff all the time. They're not pulling any special favors for him. And I'm just really grateful that the timing works out in everyone's favor.
Does this make you feel better or worse or indifferent to him fighting next summer at the White House?
Indifferent. I was already very high on it. Like, I feel, other than a brief few minutes when I opened my phone a few hours ago, I was just like literally lost my mind. I actually texted a friend of mine because I work in a company with that Connor's an investor in. I was like, no. And then I deleted the message because I finally did the math and I was like, never mind. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. We're good. No, I have a lot of confidence that he will be there and he will be as ready as he can be at this point in his career. I think for Connor, it's about things that have meaning and historical importance. And I know we said this about Noche, that like, oh, this is crazy. We're never doing this again. Fight Island, we're never doing this again. I just can't imagine that we're ever doing this one again.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
This is definitely going to be a one-on-one. I'd be shocked. Does it need to be Michael Chandler standing across the cage?
I don't know that it needs to be, but I think it should be. Yeah. I think it should be. I think that's an appropriate matchup. I just wonder, I'm curious to see how they, is it a BMF title? Is it, I mean, they have to have them at the top of the marquee. Do they just say, screw it, we're not going to worry about putting a title on this? You know, kind of break all the rules.
I mean, if Dana says they're going to make it the greatest fight card in UFC history, you have to add at least a couple fights on there. I mean, does anyone sit here, are they going to cry if Connor's at the top of the card? We all know what's what. You can put some title fights below him.
Exactly. You can put, you know, Kayla versus Amanda. You can, you know, I keep hearing these rumblings of what if Ronda shows up? That would be incredible.
Not so what do you think about that? Because I asked Dana about that at the press conference and he was like, we still talk, like she's kind of getting back in, she's had her kids, like more getting back in shape, but she wrote that book, right? And she did all those interviews where she was talking about like a gust of wind would almost give me a concussion, like I went in there, Amanda touched me once, and it was like, you know, seeing stars. Can you license someone who's been that open about like head, you know, trauma issues?
Yeah, you make a really good point. I don't know that I can speak to that. Has she commented at all on any intention, or are we just excited about the imagination and the possibility?
She put out that video. She said, I'm finding my love for the sport again, and she's working with some people that she wasn't before, like, you know, so I don't know. It's hard to say. She doesn't do much media, but I think she's a very intentional person. I don't think she's putting that out for no reason at all. Yeah. But again, I see all that other stuff. I'm like, you went on a media tour about how much issues you had with your head.
Well, perhaps though, the amount of, I mean, she's had how many years off now?
The last fight will have been, I think it was December 2017. So we're coming up on 9 years.
Maybe that would be the point of all of it, is that was how she felt at the time. And that was the truth at the time. But I mean, you're talking about many, many years of recovery and taking care of yourself and not sparring. And you know, a lot, that's one of the biggest things with fighters is not that they fight too frequently. It's that they don't take off of hard, even hard rolling, you can get a concussion from that. So they just have a hard time not training. And she's been truly resting for a long time. So, you know, if she comes out and says, I can do this, like, I have full faith that she knows she can and feels medically capable of doing it, is ready to be in there.
You should stay by the phone. You might get a call.
Exactly.
Okay. Last talking point here. We're waiting for the Paramount card announcements to come out. What's your gut saying? I feel like it's going to be Ilya Topuria. That feels pretty clear. But will it be Paddy Pimblett or will it be Justin Gaethje? We saw Armin get booked against Dan Hooker in Qatar, so don't think it's going to be him. Feels like a two-man race now between Paddy and Justin Gaethje.
It does feel like that. But I wonder if, are we coming out the gate with a numbered event?
So
it's on Paramount Plus, isn't it?
So I asked Dana pretty much this question. I don't know if they're going to do like a fight night or something. Yeah. It feels like it would make sense to just go straight into a numbered event. I asked, like, would that be on CBS or would it be on Paramount Plus? Yeah. He said probably Paramount, which makes sense. Drive the subscribers, all that stuff, stack the deck. So yeah, that's what I think. It'll be Paramount Plus, but a numbered card.
If you're talking about numbers, I think Ilya versus Gaethje would be pretty awesome. Armon deserves it, but in terms of just too insanely, like, I love Justin and I've spent enough time around him where sometimes you kind of like forget how big of a star someone is when you are around them in settings. And then I did like a meet and greet fan type thing with him maybe a year or two ago. I could not get over, there was a line of people for Justin Gaethje that was well over an hour long. Well, I mean, he's a massive superstar, obviously, so is Ilya Topuria. I think Armand was probably the harder stylistic matchup, but if you're looking for eyeballs, I don't know.
What do you do with Paddy then, you think?
Oh, that would be another eyeball fight.
Yeah. I feel like that one. I worry, and this is all due respect to Paddy, no hate at all, but like, you have this opportunity right here to do him and Ilya. Now, if you put Paddy against Max Holloway or Armin or something, I feel like you're risking this fight if it doesn't go his way.
Yes, I think so. I think they want to save Paddy for Spain or, you know, something really huge. But maybe that's, I don't know. Mike, I don't know.
You're allowed to give opinions. No. This is what we do here on the show. We sit by the bonfire and we just talk about the sport. But no, I get it. I think what you said earlier is very on point. Next year feels like it could be a truly like special and unique year for the sport. I know a lot of people will say like 2015, 2016 were the best years for the UFC as a company. Yeah. I think 4 million pay-per-view sales in 2016. So like 10 years later, maybe we're getting something special here.
I will say that from everything I know behind the scenes, the partnership with Paramount Skydance is going to be unbelievable. I think a lot of us felt like, you know, if we move away from ESPN, we're going to miss out on some of the other advertising that, you know, helps
on the NBA finals,
all
things
that type of stuff. But from everything I have heard, they are going full out red carpet. Like, they really, really see this as the future of their platform. And I'm expecting very, very big things. It's not just going to be like, oh, there it is. They're very invested in what they're doing. Their whole executive team of CBS, Paramount, Skydance came out here 2 or 3 weeks ago, had this huge summit. I was lucky enough to host a Q&A, so I got to hear everything firsthand. And it's a big, some big stuff happening next year.
It's exciting tease material. Last thing on you, when are you calling a card again next, like UFC event?
That's a great question. I'm calling Abu Dhabi, so I've got a pay-per-view coming up. Yeah.
Breaking news here from
news.
That's exciting. Yeah. Give us a tiny little preview. Which title fight are you more hyped for here?
Well, listen, I mean, obviously, being a smaller woman, I love the strawweights. Being a, you know, I'm a huge fan of grappling, so the nerd in me is very excited to see Rina Jandiroba versus Mackenzie Dern. The technique of that I'm excited about, but come on, Tom Aspinall. Like, he's been gone too long. The King of the North is returning. Like, I love the grandiosity of a heavyweight title fight. Nothing beats that.
How much harder is it to prepare for a contender series to a fight night event to a pay-per-view?
You know, it's just a different version of hard. Like, the digging in and the finding tape on these guys is the hardest part. And then, like, formulating a story that you can tell very quickly and, you know, to get people to understand who they are, you know, in a short amount of time is tricky. A pay-per-view is just a lot. And, you know, just speaking totally vulnerable here, like I'm well aware that when I, like, you know, I had the one pay-per-view 2 years ago and I was really happy with how that went and the reception was good. But I know that every time I do a pay-per-view, there's a whole audience that isn't used to hearing me that only watches pay-per-views. And so, you know, there's a lot of pressure to do it right and to do my best. And I will always do my best and always do my homework. But yeah, it's really the only time I get nervous anymore, because I just realize how important it is to, you know, to represent, to do a good job in those big spots.
Was the last one you did with Anakin in DC, or was it Anakin Bisping?
Yeah, so same, you'll have same that crew. Yeah, it'll be great. And we did Mexico City together, Anakin in DC and I. So, like, you know, it's a group I'm very familiar with, and I know the flow will be good. It's just like, I gotta nail it as best I can.
Well, that's awesome. Full circle on there with the commentary. Started out with the contenders, and then you give us some news. So awesome, Laura. Really appreciate you being here and doing this as always. We'll hopefully catch up soon. I'm going to do a little of magic here, podcast magic. I'm going to take a break, and then I'll be back with John Wood at Syndicate MMA, and we'll talk to him a little bit about Merab Dvalishvili.
I'm too old.
Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Back here on the Bonfire Podcast as we do a little tour around Las Vegas at Syndicate MMA with Coach John Wood, one of Coach of the Year frontrunners, John. Is this, I know it's hard to kind of compare and contrast, but you walk here, you see all the big fights, the belts, like, so far as we sit here a couple months left in 2025, does this feel like one of your better, more successful years?
Yeah, you know, last year was really, really good also, and the last 2 years have just been compiling, and it's been like a nonstop run, and obviously the terror that Merab is going on makes it, you know, that much better. But yeah, hell of a year, man. From last year to all the way to now has been pretty much nothing but success and wins, and everything's going in the right direction. The team is just awesome. So it feels really good, you know. But just like MMA in itself, as I never try to get too excited. I never try to get too down. You got to kind of keep that even keel, because that shit can turn in a second, you know? So I always make sure I temper all my, you know, my expectations.
Seeing what Merab Dvalishvili has done though, like this year, a pretty historic year to be in the corner for 3 championship fight wins. Like, this is unprecedented stuff. Only 7 other champions have done this before. So can you at least get a little high off that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, what Merab is doing and I've said this before, he's going on a legendary kind of run right now. And if he can keep doing what he's doing, and I know what he wants to do is fight one more time this year and break that record. He wants to be the first guy to do that. And it really just comes down to if the UFC is going to let him. You know, I think they have other plans, but, you know, honestly, I feel like they owe that to him. You know, he's stepped up a couple times and done some fights that, you know, necessarily weren't healthy for and that didn't want to do at the right time. But hopefully they let him do it. And, you know, he's got a plan, because he wants to get December and then March and then White House and then see. I'm sure he'll probably try to do a 4 again next year. So it's pretty crazy, man. It really is. It's one of those things when you sit back, you're just like, wow, you know, it is kind of mind blowing to be attached to something that is so special, you know. But it's so weird, because we're just here doing the same things we do every day. Merab is literally in the room training with all the guys every day, doing the same thing that everybody does here, you know. And that's kind of the thing that we've built at Syndicate, is a team, you know, team atmosphere and a culture that everybody feeds off everybody. No one's bigger than anybody else. And you would never know from coming in. He came in today and just watched practice. You know, he brought his brothers in to watch practice and hung out, and just, you know, he's just one of the guys. So you got to kind of like sometimes pinch yourself, remind yourself, holy shit, this is really special.
It's so interesting, right? Because you have a bunch of great guys in the room. That always happens. But there's like game day players, right? Like the guys, they get the bigger fights, and that's the whole sport. Can you show up and can you succeed in that moment? Or do you kind of take the step back? Can you tell with certain guys, especially like him, like that he has that side of him too?
Oh, yeah. You know, as a coach, there's a few people that can be built into, but there is definitely guys that, I mean, there's guys we have here now that are not so good in the room, but they show up on fight night and they are spot on, you know. And there's guys and vice versa. There's guys that are killer in the room. Not so much of those they have here, but I've seen it before where there's guys that are killers in the room and guys that don't show up. And Merab is a guy who shows up everywhere. He shows up in the room, shows up in the sparring, shows up in the fights. And, you know, he's just, like I said, when he first got here, he had that drive. You knew he had that drive. You knew there was no quitting him on the mat. He was always hardworking, you know, trains 2-3 times a day. The guy is a grinder, but I really didn't know that he was at first, just from the first few times of working with him, that he was going to be what he is. And then after a few months of working with him, I was like, holy shit, this guy's different. You know, this guy is really different.
How did you guys get to know each other for the first time?
So, you know, being Vegas, everybody comes out of Vegas being the fight capital. The UFC PI is a block from here. You know, it's literally you could throw a rock and hit it if you got a good arm. So when that came out here, there's an influx of fighters from all over the world just show up every day. Fighters show up every single day, just move here. And for the PI, which still kind of blows my mind, because I would think that the first thing you would want to do is like find a gym and go and do that. But it happens every single day. Guys move out here. They know there's a couple good gyms to go to and they just figure they're going to fit in. So he was one of those ones that like 5-6 years ago now, he started popping in from New York, and he would come in and he'd start, you know, hanging out here, and Aljo had made the move and he was going back and forth, and he just started spending more and more time, you know. And it was like about the, I think it was right before the Stamen fight, the Cody Stamen fight, or even the fight before that, that he was here. And, you know, with someone like that, I was watching him and I just noticed he was good in the room. He's a good guy. He's a good vibe. Like, you, there's, Marab's one of the best people I know. And so he started to fit, you know, that way. And I was like, I like this guy, you know, and, but he kept going back and forth. And so I let him kind of let him want to make the decision that he wanted to be here. And so we would get on, and I saw him, he would work with the guys really good. And after about a year, you know, he'd come up to me and he's like, Coach, you know, can we start working? We started working together. And I was like, you know, and then I had to figure out how he worked, because I've said this before, Marab has MMA ADD. He's just like, you teach something and he's just, you know, able to start sparring all of a sudden, you know, during practice in the middle of technique. Yeah. But I also realized the man only needs one, he needs to see something one time. As soon as you show him one time, I swear to God, I've never seen anything like it. He'll do it live and sparring perfect. You know, so once I adapted to figure out how he trained, we kind of started hitting it off. And then I figured out how I need to train him. And it just became, you know, we got closer and closer, and he started seeing the things that I was teaching him work. And he's one of those guys, once you get him to believe what you're trying to get him to believe and he sees it works, it's off to the moon. You know, he takes it and runs with it. And so we just really kind of like slow played it for the first year or two. And then we just realized, man, this is a great combination. Everything's going the right
way. Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Direction. And it's been nothing but, you know, great since, you know, he's a great teammate, great partner, great leader. He's a good friend. Like, it's everything, you know. So it's been so good over the years. And I think we did it the right way, where we kind of both, you know, made sure that was the right situation. And obviously it looks like it is.
How do you determine who you embrace in that way who comes into this? Because as you said, so many fighters coming through. I'm sure a lot of people want to come in here and work with you, even if it's just for like the sparring or the training, maybe not the specific coaching, but how do you filter that?
So, you know, something at Syndicate we're trying to do is run this more like a professional sports team. Like, that's the one thing with MMA. A lot of it's the wild, wild west. A lot of it's just chaos. We had a fighter today, you know, very much today, who just showed up and wanted to just think he was going to be on the team. And that's not how we do things. The way I look at things is that you have to be, first and foremost, you have to be able to add something to our team. If you come in here and, you know, you're not a good training partner, or maybe you're really, really, you're a talented guy, or we've turned down UFC fighters. We have a certain culture and a certain fit that we we know the system that we have works. And if the person buys in and we can see that they fit into that system and that we like them and they like us and it all works, then we go forward with it. But like, it's not for everybody. And, you know, especially here in Vegas, like the culture in Vegas is pretty crazy, man. And I've not been a part of that for years. It's like, we have a team, we have something special. If you want to be a part of it and you want to be here with us, great. If you want to be everywhere else, great. No problem. Go be everywhere else. But we're trying to do it different. You know, we're trying to do it to where we have team meetings, coaching staff. We have a full staff. We meet weekly with the coaches, have a weekly meeting. We have tape studies. We have everything. We try to take out all of the problems for the fighter and put it on us. And we try to take care of everything. And if the person wants that kind of, you know, situation where we're here to make your life easier and you think that you can get better, then it's going to work. You know, and there's a lot of the nomads here that want to just go from everywhere and don't really want to be coached by one person. That's okay too, you know, but we kind of have a system and a standard, and we, you know, we close the doors for sparring. Not everybody's going to come in here and not everybody's going to see what we do. I feel like we're doing something very special here and very different, and it's paying off. It's showing, you know, and so we want to keep that together. And if people, you want to come in and be part of it, then you're going to put in the work that everybody else puts in.
You think Marab is like the best example of your system and the effectiveness of it right now? Or do you have another one that comes to mind who maybe you've worked with for longer?
I mean, there's been a lot over the years, and obviously Marab is the best because look at what he's doing. That guy is the best in the world, if not the best fighter in the world right now. So it'd be hard to say that he's not the best example because clearly, you know, the results are there. But I think that there's multiple results and examples of lots of people that have come here over the years, and we really focus on the fighter and what they need. As far as a coach, I feel like I can mesh and blend to anybody's style. You know, I'm a true and true MMA coach. I don't have one specialty. I'm not the best at everything, but I'm pretty darn good at a lot of things. And especially when it comes to MMA, you know, there's a lot of little intricate things that we tweak and fix, and it makes a big difference in fighting. And I don't think anybody has ever come here and not been successful. You know, like it's been going on for a long time. You know, like I always say, Roxanne was a great, you know, Roxanne Modafari was one of my greatest, you know, probably like one of my best examples of somebody who maybe wasn't even supposed to be a fighter or wasn't supposed to be, you know, we
just maximized her potential.
Yeah. And we maximized her potential all the way to a title run, to this, to that, you know. So it just takes a little bit of talent and toughness and willingness, and that can go pretty far here.
In terms of like, I feel like all the coaches have their own philosophies of like, you know, the type of stuff they want to work on. What's like an MMA trend that you've seen in the past like year or two that you've implemented into your system, and then maybe some stuff that you've seen that you've chopped off because you thought this no longer works the way the sport is evolving?
Yeah. I mean, one thing myself is the specialty coaches. You know, there's always everybody claims that they're an MMA coach or they're this or that. You got these striking coaches. It doesn't mean that great striking coaches might work for MMA, but like, if you don't understand the game, if you don't know what the ground game is, if you don't know how to work a cage, if you don't know how to work on a wall, if you don't know whatever, you're not really an MMA coach. You know, you're a coach, you could be a specialty coach, but what we do is like everything that's implemented from every one of my coaches is the fact that they must know MMA. My striking coaches do jiu-jitsu. They wrestle. They pay attention. They need to know if I'm not there that what is being taught is very similar, and what, you know, we all have a standard and a system. So I don't really do the specialist thing anymore. Like MMA, I believe, is its own thing. I believe it's become its own sport, and striking is different when you can involve takedowns. Takedowns are different when you can involve striking, you know, and you have to be able to work it forwards and backwards and left to right, up, down, all around. So realistically, just making sure that like the need for the one thing, like I said, we do here differently is everybody is an MMA coach. You better know the ground. You've got to know the stand up. You've got to know every area to make sure. And so we don't really, like I said, have many specialists. My jiu-jitsu coaches, my two black belt, you know, head coaches, Shane and Jerry Shapiro, both MMA fighters, very good MMA fighters. And they know, you know, when they're teaching jiu-jitsu, if there's fighters in there, they make the changes for the fighters. I love it when they're, you know, a class of 100 people and they'll go to the fighter, hey, if you're fighting, we're doing this, we're doing that. So we got a really, like I said, a special system and thing going on here.
In terms of like actual technique, like I had Michael Chiesa on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about, I think it was right after we got another spinning elbow knockout, and then just got another one last weekend with Sergio Pettis. And he was like, I think this is going to happen more and more because people are figuring out how to counter the over aggression, use that move and stuff. Is that something you've kind of picked up on as well?
Oh man. Well, I will say, we had a UFC fighter in here today doing sparring rounds and dropped and stopped somebody with a spinning elbow. So, and it was beautiful. And those are the things that are hard to like train and practice. Thank God she had a big elbow pad on, but it just hit perfect. And it was like, woof. Because you got to be careful throwing those things. But I think there's a time and a place for everything. And that's what I always try to tell. Like, there is no one path in a fight. You know, something that might work in the first doesn't work in the second. Something that didn't work in the first might work in the third, you know. You just have to be able to adapt. And that's what, like I said, the biggest thing we do here is train MMA. And it's not so much about like what works. It's about what doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, what you do with that, you know, making mistakes into techniques. Everybody focuses so much on, hey, we've got to be perfect and do this. It's like MMA is so ugly and sloppy sometimes. Let's make that ugly and sloppiness effective, you know? So every technique has a thing, and we're still growing and adapting. And like the crazy shit, like, you know, the calf kick didn't evolve until a couple of years ago. And, you know, now people are starting to know how to defend a calf kick. So you're seeing less and less. Sometimes they still work, but people, you know, you check a calf kick, it hurts. So learning how to stop and do those things, but everything is on the table. And that's the crazy, the good and the bad about MMA is like, you just don't know what the hell is going to happen.
What's your philosophy on closed guard from bottom? Do you hate it or do you tell?
I'm not going to say the first word that came to my mind, but anybody who knows me knows what I was going to say. So, I just think you're looking at, you know, getting beat up. If you close your guard from the bottom and you want to stay there, feel free. We'll stay there. We'll hang out. That's something that we work on. Somebody closed their guard. In fact, you'll hear me in a fight. Guard's closed. Just
go to town.
Yeah. Have fun. You know, wait and just don't get crazy. And eventually after you beat them up a little bit, they'll open up and go and make the go. But I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan.
Me neither. I think that's something that should have been phased away, but.
Old school jiu-jitsu, when I came up in jiu-jitsu, I loved closed guard because I could play guard and you know, I used to hit arm bars and triangles all the time. You can't get that in jiu-jitsu anymore because no one plays closed guard. Everybody's moving so much. MMA, terrible idea.
Yeah, I would love to see like the stats of like arm bars, triangles, all those things from bottom because it just feels like it's plummeted in this, you know.
It has to be. It's changed so much. When I roll, I'm just like, hey, stop. Come here. Come, you know, you can't play bottom anymore. It's crazy.
I asked Marab this question in the lead up to the fight when he was saying like, I'm going to knock him out, all that stuff. And, you know, great way to build the fight. But I said to him, like, you look at the George St. Pierre's, the John Jones, is like what made them so amazing and such great champions is they got to a point where they had not only like beat you, but they had beat you at what you said you were the best at coming into the fight. Yeah. So like for him, I mean, he almost got it, but is that like the level you're seeing him get on? Even if that maybe that wasn't his intention going in there, like, is that how good this guy's getting?
Yes, absolutely. People think I'm kidding when I say, like, listen, you better watch out for a strike and you better watch out for submissions. Oh, he's not this, he's not that. Well, he's going to be. And I told everybody, Corey is a very good fighter. And if we don't finish him, which he's hard to finish, it won't be for lack of trying. And had we, you know, a little more experience, like that's a great experience for Marab because now Marab knows that he can knock somebody out at that high elite level. He is going to do it. We just need to settle down in that moment, take a step back, throw a couple more punches, and we probably finish that fight. But he just gets so excited and he's been one way for so long. He's ready to grab you, take you back down and start mauling you. So it's just getting a mindset and getting Marab's mindset wrapped around something. And once he does, it's insane. Like you will not see, you'll see him now probably when he comes back into camp, which will probably be next week, you know, he'll just start dropping people in sparring. You know, he really will have that thing, but it's nasty. Like I said, once he believed that he could submit somebody, he's in here submitting the entire, went from no submissions to submitting everybody multiple times around. And we're talking about high level good guys. He's going to start doing the same with the stand-up. Whatever he puts his mind to, the man is it's so crazy because it just looks chaotic to the naked eye. People go, oh, he's not this, he's not that. Get in there with him and just see how the timing is. Because everybody sees the same thing I see. You know, it doesn't look pretty, but it doesn't look pretty for a reason. We're going to keep it not looking pretty, but it's going to be very beautiful to us when we do what we need to do. He's just going to keep getting better. I'm telling you, he's at like 60% right now, 70% max. His ceiling, I don't know if there is a ceiling for this man. He's just a savage dude.
No, he seems like he's doing some very special stuff right now. I know you're kind of like, will he overrule if they make this December fight happen? You'll just accept it and get him ready?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like
no pushback.
Yeah. If he, one, I would never stop him from doing what he wants to do. Two, he's in here training, no matter training camp or non-training camp. He trains the same way. Right. It doesn't change. So if he has a fight, literally, I swear his sparring rounds are harder than his fights. What he does in here on a daily basis is harder than he fights. It really is. And, you know, we throw the book at him trying to get him, you know, in bad spots and positions. And that's why he always goes out there and he's like, man, he was like, you're right, coach. That was a lot easier than I thought, you know? And it's just so if he wants to go out and get a big paycheck and break records, who am I to stop him? You know, he's going to do the same thing anyways. The only thing different is he has to cut weight, you know, and that's, he's not a huge fan of that, but.
Did he do something different this time? I thought someone had mentioned that maybe he changed up a little bit.
He did. So his weight cuts are generally terrible. Like as far as he just has an old school path of most resistance mindset. If it doesn't hurt and kill me, it's not working. So he would starve himself for literally come Sunday, Monday, you know, he would already be no water, no food. And when I say no water, no food, I'm talking no water, no food. He would literally starve himself for the week. And by Tuesday, he's already dying. By Wednesday, when we're doing media and stuff, he's just, you know, and everybody was just like, oh, are you okay? You know? And so this time we convinced him to finally eat and drink, you know, and just eat a little bit, like eat, you know, the PI came over, Charles from the PI said, here's what you can do. And we got him on some food, got him on some water for the week, and whole different person. Everybody was just like, what's you, it's good. Yeah. You know? And so he had life to him. We tried the bathtub deal and he just so dead set. Again, he's one of those guys that I want to work it off. I want this. And I'm like, you could do it easier ways. I don't really care about how he gets it off when it comes to that point. It's leading up the eating and drinking, just not having to suffer for an entire week. So that was a huge win. Mm-hmm. We dropped a couple pounds in the bathtub and then he was like, no, I got to run. And so he got up and ran the rest of it off. Great. You know, I think that worked out better. And like I said, if we can get him to eat and drink again during fight week, much happier guy, much better, just everything. So we'll tweak a little things, but you know, Marab knows his body. So how he wants to do things, if it isn't broke, I'm not going to fix it. Trying to make things easier for him, but also he's the boss when it comes to it.
Piotr Jan was on Ariel's show today. I think he said he was 50% for the first fight. I was just talking about this with Laura Sanko and the last thing, like, you know, the first Alex Pereira, Ankalaev fight, Pereira was 40%. Now Ankalaev had injured ribs. Like, there's always something. And it seems like this always, you know, this is just the way the sport is now. Everyone has to say something. But when you hear that, I don't know, with Piotr, like, does that make you think of that first fight? Do you feel like you guys got the best of Piotr the first time around?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, say whatever you got to say to build the fight. Like I said, I'm a Jan fan. That was a little disappointing. It's like, oh my God. Okay. Well, now we've got to go out there and do you worse than we did the first time. And so it just to prove a point. And I think Marab will, you know, you also got a Marab that was 50% also in skill set. He is so much better than when they first fight. And that second fight is going to be so much worse for him. And the fact that he said that, I'm just like, and I don't know if he's actually saying it, if there's people behind the scenes writing the shit for him, but it's like, dude, just shut up. Like, you're a fantastic fighter. Like, I said, nothing but respect for him and his camp, and it's great. But if you start to see things like that, it's like, dude, come on, man. Like, everybody's, don't take the fucking fights then, guys. If you're going to come out crying, I got hurt ribs, I got hurt dad, don't take the fight then. If you don't want to do it, if you're so banged up that you think you're compromised, that's the part that got it, don't take the fight. If you take the fight, I tell any of my guys, we're all banged up, we're all injured. If you want to take the fight, take it. Whatever happens, it's on you. It's on you. You get your ass whooped, we're not blaming injuries, we're not doing this. And you'll never, the one thing you'll never hear Marab come out and say, it was this, it was that. There's so many times he's been injured and so many camps. Let's say shit. I've said it. Like, he never said anything about the Umar fight, but like I said, miserable, terrible fight, like to the point where I didn't want him to do it. I'm glad he did, but like, I know what he did on, like, how bad that was. Come on. And even for the Jan fight, there's things that were going on in that fight. I could tell you right now. I could tell you. In fact, I think we posted his hand was completely broken and it was the size of a football the week before that fight. Who cares? You know, like, if you're going to take the fight, take the fight. Like, don't come out and, you know, especially years later, and say whatever. But good, sell the fight. I don't care. It's all good.
It's bullshit board material, right? Is that kind of a thing in the sport? Do you believe in that as well?
I mean, I just think you're going to try to build it and put yourself in the best position you can to get the fight and say whatever you need to say. And great. We were 50% too. Cool.
It's a fine line. Everyone deals with it differently, right? Like, I don't think the Alex Pereira stuff, that's not a guy you need to fuel. And Merab kind of seems the same. Like, he's already got enough motivation. The last thing you need to do is urge this guy on more than he already is.
I'm actually happy that that came out today, because that sets a whole different tone. Merab's actually been very nice and friendly, and he's a respectful guy. You start saying things like that, that just puts the fuel on the fire. And if, I don't know, like, if I'm everybody, I'm not trying to do that. Not that we need that, but
I know it's interesting. I know the first fight, like, or I guess, do you see that being a vastly different fight second time around? Like, Piotr, he's got a couple good wins, and I know he seems confident that he was able to stop the takedowns, I guess, more consistently, but he couldn't get his back off the cage.
I see it being a much worse fight for him. I just don't see, again, respectfully, really a big fan of that guy. I think he's a good dude, and I love watching him fight, but I do not see anything there that would be a different threat for us. And there's so many more things that'll be a different threat for him.
Before I let you go, we're taking a lot of time here. What's coming up next for you? Like, what's your next big one around the corner in your mind?
So this weekend, fly out to Texas. I got the Brennan brothers, Lucas and Tyler Brennan, fighting in Texas, and come back. Weekend after that, Canada for Davy Grant. And then we've got Jacqueline Cavalcante, Luana Santos, Muin Gafarov. A bunch.
Goes on and on and on.
Others in camp right now. Yeah, I think Andre Feely's trying to jump on a car. We got Chepe Mariscal looking for a fight, I think, maybe in Abu Dhabi. It's every weekend, you know, for the next foreseeable future is booked up. And then Marab's just chomping at the bit to tell me that he's going to get that fight, and then it's back to the chaos.
What do you think percentage on that he fights on December 6th?
I know for a fact, I talked to him today, 100% he wants it. 100% he wants it. It's just a matter of if when he goes and meets with Hunter, if, you know, what they want. The UFC is going to do what they want, and I've heard some kind of the back end stuff of what actually, why they would or wouldn't. And it makes sense. Rob's just going to have to push for it. If he really wants it, he's going to have to push for it. And I really think they should let him do it. I really do. Like, I feel like, let him break the record. He's done so much. He is a company guy. He is the dude that they want right now. He's a great champion. He's a people, you know, he loves being a champion. The people love him. He's just, like I said, he's couldn't ask for a better guy right now, and he'll do whatever you need him to do. So I hope they let him have it just for the sake of him wanting it. And then, yeah, I think it's 50-50 right now.
He's just being so amazing. I give him the opportunity. This guy's on a special run right now. And you just look, I mean, I probably said going into the Umar fight, like, obviously they're both great, but like, this division is just so skilled and so deep. Like, I don't see anyone holding the title for 3-4 title defenses. Here he is. He's done it all in a freaking year. So like, that should show. And he's made this division somehow seem like not as deep as it was before, because he's beating everyone so thoroughly. So could not be more impressive. I mean, next couple wins here, I was looking at threatening Anderson Silva's all-time winning streak. Like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime fighter. And if you go back to the guy that, you know, people maybe weren't as much behind as they are now, like, he shows what you can do in the sport with, you know, success and determination and all that.
100%, man. Like, and he deserves it all. Like, he is a sincerely true good person, great heart, giving to his teammates. He'll be here. Like, he's here for his teammates, his family, his people, his country. He's legitimately just like one of the best people I know. And he deserves everything that he has earned and getting right now. And even more, you know, and he did it the hardest possible way. The UFC did not want that guy to be champion. They really didn't. But he also has developed himself into being an entertaining fighter. You know, like, 10 fights ago, no one would have guessed, like, holy shit, he's almost knocking guys out or submitting Sean O'Malley, or, you know, like, running through these guys that are supposedly more skilled and dangerous and bigger and taller and longer, you know. So he's just doing special things, and he's going to continue to do special things. And I truly, in my gut, it's MMA, so anything can happen on any given night, but I think he's going to break all the records.
like kind of what Sean O'Malley said. Like, I don't know if you saw those comments, like, you need to knock him out. I'm the guy most capable. And I believe that, like you said, anything can happen in this sport. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone's going to outwill him, outpace him, out, you know, do whatever for it to beat him 49, 46, or even 48, 47. Like, you got to do the MMA thing where something you can't calculate or prepare for. And it just is the craziness of the sport.
When it happens, if it ever happens, it's all of us are going to be like, oh my God, that was, no one saw that, you know. Sean, I like that dude more and more. He's pretty funny online, you know. Him and Tim are good guys, and the shit that he posts, man, I legit laugh at it. You know, I don't think he takes himself too serious, and I do believe Sean's a great fighter, and I do believe he can still win a lot of fights, man. Like, he really is. Like, he's a talented guy, and there's, again, what you just said, the division below Merab, there's a lot of guys that could be champion. That top five, Corey, Sean, Jan, Umar, they're killers, dude. They're all top 10. You know, they're all, even Batista, like, that guy is so underrated. You know, great fighter, make you look bad. That top 10, they're all killers. And it's just like, you know, they're going to have to sit around and fight each other for a while. Yeah, it's just different, you know, it's just different.
Congrats on helping him get to that level, man. It's very cool. I appreciate you letting me in here because I haven't had the opportunity. I'd definitely like to come back at some point and see the full practice, but congratulations, man. You deserve it all.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. It really is an honor to have anybody. It's still shocking to me that anybody wants to interview me or talk to me about anything, but I appreciate it.
You've been doing your thing for a while, so I appreciate that. That does it for this edition of the Bonfire Podcast. I will see you all back here next week by the Bonfire.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.